Are you ready to talk Padres baseball?
We've got you covered.
Today may be an off day for the Padres, but we've filled up Mike Grace and brought him in to talk some baseball.
Ready to roll, ready to talk about Padres baseball because he's got a belly full of donuts.
We've also got the only member of our staff with a PhD, real or otherwise, breaking down the biosciences. It's Dr. Bivacqua.
I guess if you have a bone and it's bruised, it's called a bone bruise. I never knew about that. Never knew about oblique muscles either. I mean, I thought they were just invented just in the last couple of years.
Now, broadcasting from the AMR studio, it's Padre Social Hour, presented by United Airlines, with your hosts, Mike Grace and...
Do you like Dr. Kurt or Dr. Bivacqua?
Dr. Kurt.
Dr. Kurt.
Welcome to the show from the AMR studios. He's just
pretty
Kurt Bivacqua. Oh, you're always good,
just
friend.
Call me Doc.
Doc?
No, the intro was good. I didn't say I was.
You think the intro is good without you bringing the flavor?
It brought some flavor.
Yeah. Hot sauce.
That was hot. That was hot, as Mark Grant would say.
Oh,
that's
man.
Hot sauce.
Blooper always surprises us with those every day. Never know what's coming.
That was one of the better ones, I have to admit.
Well played, Blooper.
Yeah.
Nice
good job.
Good job.
A lot of stuff to talk about, too.
Really, really interesting game. We're going to talk a lot about the strategery of manager Buddy Black. Definitely want to get your opinion. Twitter was on fire yesterday talking about some of the possible moves that could have been made in yesterday's game. So many different things going on. Not the outcome the Padres are looking for. Crazy. They've only won one four-game series in Arizona since the beginning of the franchise. And yesterday was the chance to get the second, didn't get it, ended up splitting the series. Not exactly what they were looking for. Cash was good, not good enough. The offense kind of went away again.
They still win games after you and I do a show, though.
I think we're good luck.
Yeah, there's something going on there. I don't know what it is, but
Blooper should have saved us for a day that wasn't an off day.
That's all right. It'll carry over to tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. So let's talk a little bit about Andrew Cashner. And we talked a lot about what he was going through the day before Mother's Day. His mother's been going through so much, and a really special start for him, for his mother to be able to watch him on Mother's Day, and basically pitched really, really well, but had two mistakes. And like he said to the press after the game, the other team hasn't missed basically any of his mistakes all year.
I will agree with him on that. That's certainly right on as far as that's concerned. But I tell you what, if I'm Andrew Cashner, next time I go to the mound, I'm not going to make any mistakes. I'm going to make sure that I don't make mistakes like that. If I make a mistake, it's going to be outside the plate. It's not going to be over the plate. Just because of the reason that he just stated, and you just repeated that he said, they haven't missed, and boy, he's right on there. And I don't know why. That's a strange deal. You would think somebody foul a ball back or ground it out or pop it up or something. But no, they're going deep. I mean, this ball club's giving up 44 home runs.
It's unbelievable.
Especially
when you look at what they did last year, and then you add a guy like James Shields, who traditionally has had problems with giving up a long ball. But it's pretty crazy. You look at Cashner, he's already given up 8. And it's mind-boggling. And I think that's just the cyclical nature of baseball. Maybe they had a little more luck last year than maybe they deserved, and this year it's kind of catching up. It's always the ebbs and flows of the game. I don't know, but it is a crazy, crazy phenomenon.
Or maybe they knew that their offense wasn't going to score last year, and they went out and bared down. Whereas this year they take the mound and they go, you know, we're going to score some runs.
You don't want to believe that.
You don't want to believe that.
But they are human beings playing a game, and that is a possibility.
I'd like to see Andrew from now until the rest of the year take the mound with the philosophy that he's got last year's offense behind him and see how well he does. He might win a few games.
No, it's true. It's really, really hard to do, though. You got to think that if it were that easy to just put yourself in a mindset, completely ignore what happens on the other side of the field. And they always say they do that. They don't care what happens on the offensive side of the ball. But I think, like you're saying, human nature says you're going to pitch to the game situation.
That's absolutely true. You're going to do that. You know, The only problem I had with the two home runs yesterday is who hit them. You know, those guys shouldn't be hitting home runs off Andrew Kashner. You know, if it's a Goldschmidt, if it's a Trumbo, then I can see it. You know, even one or two other guys in the lineup. But not Owing and the other guy that hit the home run. I just, you know, they were bad pitches. Andy knew that. And he called himself out on it. He said they're not missing pitches. But you're still making those mistakes, and you can't make those mistakes, especially if you know that your team's going to have trouble scoring runs for you. And let's face it, Kashner is not a guy that this ball club scores runs for whatever reasons that we'll never know.
No, a lot of people have talked about that, how there's usually one tough loss guy who, no matter what he does, ERA-wise, start-wise, just he can go out there, pitch great, and either he's going to get a no decision, he's just not going to get the win. Cash is sitting around 3 ERA, and he's 1-6. Now, the win stat is pretty silly, and it doesn't really tell you a lot about how a guy pitched, but he should have more success in that category. But at the same time, you would have thought when you're going up against Johnny Avery, everybody in the bullpen, like you were yesterday against the Diamondbacks, a bullpen that's not that good, about a 4.5 ERA, you would think you're going to score more than one run, and they didn't.
No, they didn't. And they had a couple of opportunities, and I would imagine you're going to touch on those later.
No, we're going to get into it right now, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go.
So, all right. Top of the sixth, bases loaded. Andrew Kashner has only pitched 5 innings. And a lot of people thought Bud Black should have pinch hit for him there. Personally, I don't necessarily agree with that assessment. Would you have pinch hit for Kashner there when you've got Derek Norris, Yonhervis Solarte, Matt Kemp on the bench getting the day off, ready as pinch hitters? Do you let Cash go up there, or do you need to get a few more innings out of him as your starter?
I don't need to get a few more innings out of him, but I'm not going to pinch hit for him there because there's 2 outs. If there was 1, I would have.
So that's the big difference for you.
As far as I'm concerned, if I'm in Buddy Black's position, I pinch hit for Andrew Kashner if there's 1 out. Because I don't want – that's the one thing that can hurt me is the pitcher hitting into a double play. Although, Kashner runs pretty good. And he swings the bat pretty good.
Yeah, and he hit the ball hard.
So he
at
did
somebody.
Hit the ball well. And the last time Buddy put up a pitcher in a situation where everybody could have second-guessed him, Shields got the hit. This time it didn't happen, but the fielder also had to make one heck of a play in order to get Andrew out. So I don't think it's a bad call. It's certainly not a call that you can second-guess the manager on. Sure, can you talk about it? Yeah, because we're talking about it.
Well, that's why the internet was created, to second-guess major league managers.
Oh, that's why the mouth was created, to second-guess major league managers. It's just
thinking about the mouth being created.
Yeah, that's why Guy did that.
Oh, that is so good to know. All right, now here's the other situation. So, top of the eighth, you've got first and second, 1 out, and Alexi batting. You do have Alexi as a left-handed hitter against a right-handed pitcher, and another opportunity to possibly pinch hit for a guy there. Lexi hasn't had a lot of success this year with runners in scoring position. The average is not good right now. He's been getting on base at a decent clip, but that might be a situation where you would consider pinch hitting. Would you have pinch hit there?
Lexi's butt's on the pine if I'm managing the team.
Yeah?
Absolutely. Yep.
No,
that was the one I disagreed with.
And that's fair. And that's what this is about. This is an open discussion. We're having a social hour about it. I think a lot of people would agree with you. Now, you got those guys in later. They didn't get to come up with runners in scoring position or runners on base. Norris, Solarte, Kemp, they all hit in the ninth inning, but they were not able to hit with runners on base. So definitely a tough call. And, I mean, we've talked about it before. What's the most difficult thing a manager does? You said making pitching changes. Obviously, this is a challenging part of the job, making these decisions.
Oh, absolutely. It's a part of it. I still think the pitching changes are number one. And then when you come into situations like this, they fall behind it somewhere. But in that situation, Buddy had to have his reasons. What they were, I don't know. It might have been defense. It might have been the fact that he just thought Lexi was swinging the bat well enough to be put up and stay in that situation. I don't know. I wouldn't have had him hit in that situation. I would have put somebody else in there.
If I'm just guessing, and I don't want to try to read Buddy's mind, it's a left-handed against a right-handed pitcher. Norris and Kemp are both right-handed. Solarte maybe is the best option there. He's been pretty good with runners in scoring position. But maybe defense was the reason there. But in the end, he had a screwy defense by the end of the game anyways. You had Middlebrooks playing shortstop by the end of the game. So maybe one he would ask for a do-over on. Who knows? But
I'm going with Derek Norris in that situation.
That's your guy?
Absolutely.
And the at-bat he had in the ninth, he hit the ball hard, almost got over the center fielder's head for a double. But, you know, that's baseball. You can't control. All you can do is hit the ball hard.
And you never know what was going to happen. You never know that Derek Norris is going to hit the same ball that he hit in the ninth inning. So you can't say, well, the center fielder would have been playing shallower and he wouldn't never got to that ball, because that's not the situation at all. But I'm putting Derek Norris up in that situation. One, because chance of him hitting into a double play are pretty slim. Number two is he's leading the club, or he's pretty darn close in leading the club in doubles. And he's been a double machine. And he's got a nice batting average. I mean, he's hitting the ball well, not only with runners in scoring position, but he's hitting almost 300 for the season. So he's my man in that situation. If there's nobody on base, or if there's one guy on base, then I put Kemp in the game, because that's where you need the home run.
That makes sense. And you got to figure, Lexi isn't a huge risk to hit into a double play. He's got some speed, but he hit the ball hard right at an infielder, and Taylor made double play just the way it worked out. So, you know, what are you going to do? That's baseball. You play 162 of these. Yeah, you're going to second guess, and you try to first guess so that you're not saying what would have happened after, because it's so much easier in hindsight. We're all amazing managers after the fact. But
no,
mate,
I said that before the fact.
No, and I believe you. I know you watch the game with that tone, and many people do. And, hey, got to go out and get them the next day. They get an off day in Seattle today, so get everything straightened out, right?
They're enjoying themselves with Seattle seafood, I'm sure, tonight. And get a good night's sleep and go out, try to lasso the Mariners.
Speaking of Seattle seafood, next segment we're going to talk to Jesse Agler. He's on the team, or he's on the road with the team, broadcasting the game. So we're going to catch up with him, see what he's using his off day for. I'm sure he's going to have a nice dinner tonight, see what he's doing.
He's having good food, because that's a good place for it.
It's a good city, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, again, I want to talk to you guys on the show. It's the hashtag PadresSH, hashtag PadresSH, or in our live chat, Padres.com/social hour. Send us your questions, your comments. We'll talk about them on the air. You can see your Twitter handle on the air. It's all very exciting. Join the Padres and the Baseball Tomorrow Fund to help youth baseball and softball programs. On May 17th, bring new or used equipment to Petco Park to donate. Bins will be located outside of the gates. Be sure to be here Sunday. Bring your stuff for the kids. We will talk to Jesse Agler next segment here on Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines.
We're back to the AMR studio located in the Western Metal Supply Company building. It's more of Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back to the show. An off day. The team is in Seattle. Joining the team in Seattle, as he has all road trip, is our own Jesse Agler. He's been broadcasting on television with Mark Grant, and he is joining us right now on the Cholula Hotline.
Jesse. And doing a fabulous job.
Nice.
I might add.
Jesse, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for the nice words.
Well, they are well-deserved. An off day in Seattle, what are you going to be doing with your off day? It's a beautiful city. I understand you've never been there, right? What are you planning on for the evening?
First time in Seattle, that's right, and it's awesome. It's a really, really cool place. Went to the Museum of Flight this morning to indulge my inner airplane geek, and hung out with Mark Grant, bought a couple of ties this afternoon, got a great deal on a couple of ties. So it's been a big off day, and now winding down a little bit.
He didn't talk you into a hat?
He actually bought two hats today. There was a hat store that he apparently goes to every year, and he bought two hats, and he is very, very excited about them.
Good to see.
Everybody should tweet at Mudcat55 and ask him to see his new hat. That's what I'll say.
What size is it?
Double XL, I believe.
As in, like, 8.5?
No, I don't think the hats that he got. These are not baseball caps, Kurt. These are ridiculous-looking hats that only certain kinds of people can wear. And I don't think they come in the same sizes as baseball caps do. They come, for Mud, I think it's like a 2X or a 3X. So, everybody should have. He's wearing one right now. I can see him.
Good.
Good stuff. Well, it's been a pretty eventful road trip and an eventful series there in Arizona. just calling the game, what was a stranger game? Friday where Shields gives up four home runs with the different leads he got, or Saturday with Craig Kimbrell, of all people, blowing the save and then Upton winning the game in the 12th?
Yeah, no, I think Saturday was the craziest game of the series. And I think when all is said and done, and, you know, we're sitting around having a cup of coffee in September or October talking about this season, I think we're going to talk about that game in Arizona as one of the weirdest and craziest and most fun games of the entire season. Obviously, I think we all would have preferred to see Kimbrell, you know, just shut it down 1-2-3 in the ninth inning, but that's not going to happen every time. That's not reality. And the fact that they sort of held their own in the 10th with those two big defensive plays, and that Upton put him ahead in the 12th, and Quackenbush with the two great innings, to me, that was one of the most fun baseball games I've ever watched in my life. So I thought that was just a crazy one and really enjoyable.
I was impressed with Thayer, Benoit, and Quackenbush with the way they threw the ball. But I've got to ask you about yesterday. Did you get, even though it really didn't matter, it didn't change the scope of the game, did you get any further explanation for Buddy, or get an opportunity to talk to him, or hear from somebody that did talk to him, on what Jim Joyce said to him on that obstruction call that they reversed?
Yeah, I haven't gotten a great answer on that. I guess there's two kinds of obstruction, and they said that Will Myers wouldn't have got the third, but, I mean, Mudd and I were looking through the rule book, and the rule that they referenced over the loudspeaker in the press box to explain it, we could not find in the rule book. And it was like, oh, check 9.1, whatever it was, and there was no rule 9 point whatever it was in the book. And we had the new, brand new 2015 rule book. So I have yet to receive a great explanation on that. It was a weird moment in the game for sure. Jim Joyce is a really good umpire, so, you know, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt on this one. But my understanding of the rule in the moment was that either it's obstruction and he goes to the next base, or it's not. And they apparently said it was obstruction, but they didn't give him the next base. Maybe there is, you know, a caveat somewhere in the rule book that allows them to do that. I just wasn't able to find it. But, yeah, I mean, that's the nature of baseball, right? Those kinds of weird things do happen.
Yeah, just for your information, it's 7.06, and it's
Thank you.
You know, Buddy referred to both A and B in this rule, but that particular call was A. And the obstruction, the obstructed runner shall be awarded at least one base beyond the base he had last legally touched before the obstruction.
Yeah, no, that's what we read on TV, which would mean he needed to be on third base. Here's the bigger thing, and I said this, I don't know if you guys were listening to it when it was happening or a little while later, and this is one of my things with baseball that I'd really wish they would work on, is that they need, kind of like you get in football, it is like either the umpire or the umpire needs to communicate to somebody who then announces it to say what's going on. I think it's absolute just nonsense that they leave everybody in the dark, and then like two innings later, there's this little PA announcement that, you know, nobody can really understand, and that's how they explain it. In that moment, like before the next pitch is thrown, there needs to be a public announcement, you know, saying, hey, here's what happened, here's what our ruling is. Same thing on these instant replay reviews. They need to say, hey, we're checking to see if the guy was tagged or not, or whatever the situation is in a particular review. And then after the review, they need to say, we don't think he was tagged, you know, he's safe, or whatever. I don't understand why baseball is so, you know, against communicating these things clearly in the moment. If it was me making the rules, if I was the commissioner, I would say these things need to be explained, you know, before the next pitch is thrown.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I definitely heard you on the broadcast say that, and we've talked about that just around the office, that that's what's going to make this game more fan-friendly and a better experience for whether it's people in the ballpark or people watching at home. Definitely
100%.
Something that's well needed. Let's talk about the positive of yesterday, and obviously the result for Andrew Kashner wasn't what he had hoped, but it's always fun and interesting when everybody can get so emotionally invested. Obviously, a really special day for him taking the mound on Mother's Day with everything that his mother had been through. What was that like being in the ballpark and being around the team, knowing what he had on his mind?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty intense. I mean, some of the stuff we were showing on TV, you know, the interview that Sam Ryan did for MLB Network recently, it was like, wow. You know, I mean, it was deep and it was emotional, and I was feeling emotional just watching the video, so I can only imagine how Andrew was feeling. But, you know, the guy goes out there and has what I think was his best start of the season. And you know me, Mike, I'm not going to get too caught up in a pitcher's win-loss record because I don't think it's necessarily all that reflective of how he pitches, at least a lot of the time. And that was the case yesterday. You know, no run support. If the Padres have a great day offensively and they score six runs, you know, we're talking about nothing but Andrew Kashner. But they didn't, and so we're not. But, I mean, he was outstanding yesterday. He was in control. I thought he was very good. Obviously, the two solo homers are what they are, but You know, that couldn't have been easy for him yesterday, especially with everybody talking to him about it and doing the interviews and, you know, sort of knowing that it was a big deal back home. It was awesome yesterday. I was so impressed and so happy for Cat.
Really, really interesting to hear. Talking to Jesse Agler, Padres television broadcaster right now.
Jesse does it all, doesn't he?
He does it all.
You remind me of me when I played. You're a jack of all trades.
I'm a utility guy, man. I'm happy to be in the big league, you know?
And you can do it all.
You need me there, I'll go there.
So Cash had to be feeling pretty good, though, about home yesterday, wasn't he? I mean, his mom was home. So that was a good thing.
Yeah, I haven't talked to him about it, so I don't want to say, you know, how he's feeling. But you're right. I mean, the news does sound a lot better now than even just a couple of weeks ago. So that's got to help. I mean, if you read Corey Brock's story the other day on MLB.com, you know, he was saying there was a time in spring training, which obviously wasn't that long ago, where he thought he was never going to see her again. So, I mean, it was that bad. And so, yeah, the fact that she's out of the hospital and back home now, I don't know that she's free and clear. But, I mean, you know, he's got to be feeling, you know, much better than he was in March.
Has to be. Curious your take. Having been around the team a couple plane rides here, do you sense any frustration with this team? They get a good win, they feel like they're going to build some momentum, and it just doesn't continue? Or is this a veteran group that just knows the ebbs and flows of the game and is just dealing with it? What's kind of the mindset of this team with the way they've played?
Yeah, hearing from guys, you know, especially like the Austin Vincenzo of the world, there's no panic here. You know, I mean, look, it's still early in the season. Everybody knows that, and these guys are, a lot of them have been through the ups and downs of the season before. I don't know when the point is, and maybe this is a good thing, you know, for Kurt to talk about at some point. Like, but you know, when the moment is on the calendar when maybe you start getting a little bit more concerned. But right now, they're holding their water. You know, they're winning more than they're losing, for the most part. And you know, I think they're still trying to find themselves. They're still figuring it out. And I mean, let's be real, guys. We haven't seen a point yet this season where both the pitching and the hitting have sort of all come together and been good in a 4, 5, 6-game stretch. So that's going to happen. You know, they're going to have to rattle off, you know, that 6 out of 7 or whatever at some point. But, you know, no, I don't sense any frustration with that, at least as of this point. But it's early May, so I wouldn't expect that.
Well, things turn around quickly, as we've seen in the last couple of weeks. I mean, this ball club on April 22nd, I believe, was 10-5. And since that time, they've kind of reversed things. So it can be reversed again very easily. But if at the beginning of the season somebody told you, Jesse, that this ball club would have given up 44 home runs in the first 30-some games, what would you have said to them?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't have believed that. But I also don't know that I would have believed that they'd be leading all of baseball in runs scored, you know, for as much as they have. So it definitely hasn't, you know, gone the way I think I imagined it to, but that's usually how that kind of thing happens, right? We think we know stuff, and then we end up knowing nothing. So, I don't know. I mean, we can record this conversation, play it back in August, and be like, man, look at what we were worried about. Or maybe we'll be, you know, totally on point, but who knows? Like you said, things can turn around really quickly. They can turn around in a big way, and I'm curious to see how the next couple weeks go.
So I know you're going to have Cholula hot sauce with it, but what are you going to have for dinner tonight?
You know, I don't know. We were just talking about that a few minutes ago, and then Seth called me and sort of interrupted that conversation, but that's fine. We'll go back to having a dinner conversation afterwards. I'm thinking maybe sushi, you know, something with fish. We're right by the water here in Seattle, so seafood seems like a pretty good choice, but I'll keep you posted. I'll text you tonight, Kurt. I'll let you know.
Crab. And just send me some. I don't care if I get it in 3 or 4 days. Just send it in an envelope. It'll still be good.
He's going to enjoy it in his
man cave. How many stamps do you need to send crab? How many stamps?
I think it's like 14.
Okay. Can I email crab? Does that work? I'm more
of an email. If the mailman knows what's in the envelope, there, it wouldn't take any stamps. You're good to go.
He just eat it.
Exactly.
Wow. With that, I'm going to let you get to your dinner plans. Appreciate the time, Jesse. Enjoy the off day, and good luck with the two games against the Mariners starting tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate you holding down the fort, and hope you're having a good time.
Always.
See you soon.
Jesse was on the Cholula Hotline. Cholula, the flavorful hot sauce with the iconic wood cap. For a delicious punch of jalapeno and poblano, check out the new green pepper sauce flavor today. Our thanks to Jesse Agler for joining us from the road. He's in Seattle, and we will be right back with more Padres Social Hour from the AMR studios right after this break.
We're back to the show that gives you everything San Diego Padres. It's Padres Social Hour, presented by United Airlines.
Welcome back. Kurt Bavakwa, Mike Grace, talking yesterday's 2-1 loss to the Diamondbacks. One thing I wanted to play for everybody that I didn't get to in the first segment because I forgot was a conversation that you and I had with Buddy Black about a week and a half ago, and I asked him if he had changed anything about his managerial philosophies or anything in general because the team was different, and this is what he had to say. Is it changing your thinking at all in your decision-making about how maybe you deal with a pitching change or something like that, knowing that you've got a stronger lineup that might get you into a game? You don't have to pull a pitcher, perhaps. Has your mindset changed at all with this team?
Well, a little. Yeah, sure it has, because, this team is built, more on, slugging percentage potential than, maybe manufacturing runs like we've had to do in the past with our personnel. You might not see as many hit and runs. You might not see as many stolen base attempts and those types of things, because we don't have those types of players. We're still going to push the envelope on certain pitcher-catcher combinations as far as a stolen base. We're still going to, hit and run with certain guys if it's out there in front of us. But, we're going to let these guys hit a little bit more than what we have in the past.
So I found that interesting. It made me think when everybody was questioning the decision to leave Cashner in. When you've got a team that's essentially first or second in the National League in runs scored, you have the opportunity to leave a pitcher who's pitching well in the game a little longer, trusting that the numbers say your team is possibly going to score more runs than they do. Now, the last few games, they've been shut out a few times on this road trip, but in general, you can have some faith that your hitters are going to score some runs.
And I think that was the situation. When he let Cashner hit there with two outs in that inning, you still got 7, 8, and 9 with a lineup that's producing a lot of runs. So your thought process, and I'm sure Buddy was thinking the same thing I did, that they're going to go out and we're still going to score runs in this game, and Cashner's throwing the ball really good, with the exception of the two mistakes that those guys did not miss. But I tell you what, Buddy might have to rethink the way he approaches the games. When a guy like Cashner pitches, maybe you have to go back and try to manufacture runs. Get him a lead. Try to score some more runs. Try to do the hit and runs. I've seen a couple of hit and runs in the last few games. They've been with Kemp and Upton.
Mm-hmm.
And if they weren't hit and runs, they were straight steals that those two guys just happened to swing at, and it sure looked like a hit and run to me.
Only in baseball would you consider changing your philosophy based on the guy who's pitching, because you believe he's the guy that can't get runs.
Sabermetrics.
I think that's the opposite of sabermetrics.
No, it is sabermetrics. If a team does not statistically score for a certain guy, are you going to go out and approach the game the same exact way every time?
I think sabermetrics would say it's more random than that, that it's absolute coincidence that one guy doesn't get run support. So I think that's the difference there.
The hell is sabermetrics doing?
That's a fair question.
You're killing me.
I want to dive back into this obstruction call a little bit, because you and I kind of gave you my theory on the play, and you seem to think there was some merit to that, because just the way you exactly explained to Jesse, there was no reason by the rules that Will Myers should have been sent back to second base. If it was truly obstruction, then he has to get the next base. Now, I saw something when I was watching as Buddy got heated with Jim Joyce, and I read Jim Joyce's lips, and he said, "Do you want me to call him out? Do you want me to call him out?" He said it 4 or 5 times in, I'm sure, not the most pleasant tone. My thought was, all right, he kind of realized that he messed up the call on some level, and he didn't want to call him out because he called the play dead. So you can't call him out. That's not fair. And he didn't want to give him third base because he didn't think that was fair to the Diamondbacks. So he split the difference, not following the rule book, and put him on second base. If you watch him right here, you can watch. Eventually, he's going to say, "You want me to call him out? You want me to call him out?" That's what he's saying. So I think he was trying to – I don't know if he told Buddy that he made a mistake on the play, but I think he realized he made some sort of mistake and was trying to split the difference. That's my theory.
Well, the 5-minute meeting that they had,
that was unbelievable,
verified the fact that he made a mistake, or that he made the wrong call, or that they're going to reverse the call that he made, because it was obstruction in my mind. There doesn't have to be intent there, and there was no intent on the shortstop, in my mind, to get in the way of the runner. And there was certainly no intent on Will Myers' side of the coin to run into the shortstop purposely. I think it was an obstruction call. And therefore, he should have gotten third base because you're awarded one base after the base that you last legally touch. I don't know why it was reversed. I can't figure it out other than what you said. Do you want me to call him out? Because you know what? By reversing the obstruction call, they had to call Will Meyer out.
Right. Because and we saw that once before. There was a play where it was actually a triple play, and I want to say it was Jesus Guzman, where he hit a ball that chopped. The umpire threw his hands up like dead ball and then changed his mind and got the triple play. And they were like, you can't just change your mind in the middle of the play. If you call the ball dead, the play is over. You can't expect the runner to run after you called the ball dead. So I think it's a similar situation in that you can't call Will Myers out, but by letter of the law, that's one of those where you probably just need to swallow it and say, hey, I may have screwed up, but I got to follow the rule book, put the guy in third base.
That's the one thing that it's hard for both a manager and a ball player. When you go to an umpire and ask for an explanation and they start giving you a bunch of bull, that's when things get heated. But when they come out and say, hey, I made a mistake.
Which happens really how often?
Not very often. But I think in this situation, although Jim Joyce looked like he was getting upset with Buddy, and if he truly made a mistake, which he did, because they wouldn't have reversed it if he had enough, he was getting ticked off at Buddy for getting in his face. He had no right to do that. He screwed the play up. And then they continued to screw it up by not calling Will out. I mean, it was it's an amazing play, and that's the reason we spent as long on it as we have, because even though it didn't make any or it looked like it didn't make any difference in the game, men on first and third, things might have been different. The
sure.
pitches might have been thrown different. You've got more pressure on the catcher to think about breaking balls and things like that. The inning might not have ended up the way it did.
I agree, and those are the things you got to figure out in the moment. It's like we've talked about, umpiring's not an easy job, but you got to figure out a way to get it right in the end. Doesn't seem like they did.
I think they should be held accountable. Ball players are.
That's the absolute number one problem I have with the entire system, is that they aren't held accountable. And Sandy Alderson tried to hold them accountable when he was in the baseball office and did somewhat of a good job, and it's just something that's kind of fallen by the wayside. And it's amazing. That's a relatively powerful union that has kept accountability out of their job performance.
It's big time. They have a big time strong union ever since Joe West took it over.
It really is. As your hometown pet retailer, Petco is proud to partner with the Padres and Petco Park. Thank you, San Diego, for sharing in our passion for pets and baseball. Petco, the power of together. Going to get some more of your Twitter questions. Send them in. Hashtag PadresSH when we come back right after this.
Welcome back to the AMR studio. Live inside Petco Park, this is Padres Social Hour.
Padres Social Hour presented by United Airlines. Padres are currently 3-4 on their road trip, a game above 500 overall, headed to Seattle, which they're actually already there. And this will be an interesting series. Seattle, many anticipated, would win the division. A World Series contender. They've been scuffling a little bit. They're 14-17. The Padres luckily missed King Felix. They won't have to face him. And they do face a couple left-handers. And we had a question on Twitter from East Village Times. Padres facing two lefties in Paxton and Elias the next 2 days. The series is set up well for the Padres. Who will DH? I think that's going to be a really interesting question to see who ends up DH. Dr. Kurt Bavak was the manager. Who's your DH this series?
Probably Derek Norris.
Okay.
I'll let Austin Hedges catch. Got Jerko at second. I'm going to let Will Middlebrooks play third base for the first game, see what he does, and keep Meyer at first base and
platoon in center field.
No, I'm going to put Will out there. He's swinging the bat well.
Even against the lefties.
Sure.
And he has been swinging the bat really well. You've got so many options. Matt Kemp finally got a day off on Sunday. He did pinch hit. Then he gets the day off today. You could possibly give him a day out off from being in the field. You could give Justin Upton a day off. Derek Norris makes a lot of sense. Get the guy out from behind the plate. get your defensive catcher, even though Derek has done a nice job defensively. I think we've seen what Austin Hedges can do back there, receiving, framing pitches, things like that. So I'd say that's at least a good bet for one of the games. Might be a good chance to get somebody else some at-bats. And I think Buddy's in an interesting spot right now because he's got three guys in Solarte, Spangenberg, and Jerko who are all actually hitting the ball pretty well right now, and you've only got two spots to play them. So, like you said, there might be an opportunity there to get one of those guys in the DH role for one game.
No, I like Buddy's position that he's in, the situation with the guys, the way they're swinging the bats. On the flip side of the coin, I want to watch the way our pitchers throw to the guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. And then I'm really anxious to see this coming weekend when the Nationals come into town. You know, you're facing some people that can hit the ball in the Washington Nationals. And then in the next two games in Seattle, you've got Cruz and another guy or two up there that can hit the ball out of the ballpark. Cano, of course. So I want to see the way they pitch to those guys and if they're smart enough not to pitch to them.
Yeah, you got a nice big ballpark in Seattle. So. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that gives a little bit of a safety net, much like pitching at home for these guys. And they are pushing Despaigne back, so he may not even get another start before Morrow comes off the DL. But you've got Ross and Kennedy, and then Shields will be going when the team comes back home. So it's smart to get Despaigne pushed back so that he's not pitching on the road. He's so much better at home than on the road. So, like you said, it's going to be interesting to see how they pitch against these offensive teams.
Yeah, I'm anxious to see it. I'm really anxious to see the Washington Nationals baseball team because they, you know, everybody picked them before the season to do something in baseball this year. And I just want to watch them play. I'm anxious.
Yeah. I said Ross. Thanks, Bloop. Meant Ian Kennedy. That's what I meant. So. Thank you very much.
You said Ian Kennedy, too, didn't you?
Did I?
Yeah.
I'm a mess. I don't know. We'll get it straightened out, right?
I knew what you meant.
Thank you. Question in the live chat from TP. Kurt, would you send Jerko to the minors? Maybe TP hasn't seen the last few games. Jerko's been hitting the ball real nicely. I think probably worked through some of those mechanical issues. And it was talked about sending him down to the minors, but I think a lot of what was going on was mechanical and not mental. So working with Alonzo Powell and Mark Kotze up here at the major league level probably got him through some of these issues he was having.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, he's swinging a bat so much better now, and that one initial move that he was making with the front part of his hip when he was not swinging a bat well and just wailing at everything. He had that one bad at-bat with the bases loaded where he swung at a pitch out of the strike zone. But you know what, guys? That's going to happen. I don't care whether it's Jed Jerko or Matt Kemp or Jock Peterson up in L.A. or the guy that's going to come this weekend with the Washington Nationals that's swinging the bat so well. It doesn't matter who you are. You're going to swing at balls out of the strike zone every once in a while. It's just too bad it was that situation with Jed.
Well, you got to be encouraged by the fact that he came back with two hits later, a big double, run-scoring double, and another single that he didn't let that one at bat. And you saw he was really frustrated with the way he handled that at bat. It also shows you how important it is not to get behind 0-2 in a count because you're just at the pitcher's mercy at that point.
Yeah, 0-2 makes it tough on you.
It really
does. And you feel so much better about yourself when you get the count even to 2-2. And then when it goes to 3-2, you almost feel like, okay, I'm at an advantage now. And he certainly was, but it was just an unfortunate situation. But I'm really happy for him because he's worked really, really hard, and he's a good kid.
And what he can bring to the team can be a very big difference maker. If he can do even what he did as his rookie year without any growth that you might have expected, that's going to make this team really dangerous if he's a 25 home run guy on this team.
Well, yeah, I'll say because you've got Matt Kemp who hasn't even started hitting yet.
Exactly.
Average-wise, he has. You've got Justin Upton who is probably going to continue to swing the bat the way he has. And, you know, you've got a couple other guys. I mean, when we get Yonder Alonso back, I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be fun to watch and see what happens when Melvin Upton is able to join this team. What's going to happen? You know, there's a lot of exciting times coming in 2015 for this Padre ball club and its fans, and I'm really looking forward to it.
A lot of exciting times indeed. It's not too late to become a Padres season ticket member. Come see some of these exciting times. Great seats are still available. Become a season ticket member and join the Padres family. Visit Padres.com/membership or call 619-795-5555. Going to take a break when we come back. More Padres baseball talk right here from the AMR studios.
You want some Padres talk?
We've got that.
Padres Social Hour returns now, presented by United Airlines.
More Padre talk on an off day. Teams in Seattle, we're here in San Diego. It's beautiful outside, not a cloud in the sky. And another question on the Twitter machine here from David Renteria Jr. Thoughts on Almonte, his debut. Haven't seen much. We saw a lot last year. What do you see Almonte bringing to this team, whether it's in the short term or maybe even a little more?
I like Almonte. I think he's got some potential. He's a good, exciting young player. He brought a lot to the ball club last year, and he just hasn't had an opportunity to play very much since he's been called up because he's really just a fill-in, I think, for the time being.
Yeah, with the outfield they have. It's funny, he's kind of a stocky guy, but he's still got some speed to him, plays good defense in any of the outfield positions, but he can play center field. I always like having an extra switch hitter coming off the bench. Makes things a little easier whenever you're trying to get those late-game situations where you're worried about the lefty-righty pitching switch, and so that can always help.
Well, he was the obvious choice when they needed somebody to call up because he's swinging a bat so well down in AAA. And, you know, he's a good guy to have. He's got experience. You know he can play, and Buddy Black feels confident with it. So that's a good scenario.
Yeah, and with him in center field, it's been fun to watch Will Myers play some first base. He's made a nice catch going over the dugout rail there. A real nice diving play to his right. To get a runner going to second, didn't try to make the double play, didn't try to do too much. He's looked really comfortable out there, and it's like we talked about, when you see him before a game, he's just taking ground balls at every position out there. He's just a kid out there loving to play the game and having fun.
That amazingly comfortable. That's the way I look at the way he has been at first base since he's been over there in the lineup. It's not that easy to move from the outfield to the infield and make a play like that because you're just not used to getting the ball off the bat. It's, you know, it's just like moving around in the infield in different positions. But Will's a good athlete. He's doing a heck of a job. He's having fun because you see every time he makes a play, his head's in the dugout.
Yeah.
Because those guys are razzing him, and he's getting right back at him. So they're having fun out there.
It was funny after he made that play in foul territory and everybody was kind of – you pumped up for him, but giving him a hard time. He was almost like a kid that was getting embarrassed by their parents. Like, come on, just let it go. I'm fine. All right, I did it. Thanks. And Buddy gave him a little pep talk. He's like, okay, I did it.
Yeah, so he's having a good time.
He's fun
there
to watch. I love watching him.
Has he surprised you with the plays he's made?
On defense, absolutely. You know, he's been a corner outfielder most of his minor league and short major league career. I mean, he did come up as a third baseman. He caught some. So I'm not surprised because I do see his athleticism, but to take to the position, especially first base, the way he has, he looks pretty confident over there. You can see guys, I don't see quite that same confidence in Solarte when he has to fill in, so I definitely have been pleasantly surprised by that.
That's the right word, confidence.
Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, host your next event at Petco Park at The Landing, presented by Cabo Wabo. This private 30 to 300-person group space at the top of the new left field seating area offers a great view of the field and includes food and beverage. Reserve today by calling 619-795-5555. Finishing up the show right after this.
From start to finish, it's the best 60 minutes of Padres talk you'll find anywhere. Now, from the AMR studio, it's more of Padres Social Hour.
Welcome back to the last segment of the show. Kurt Bevacqua, Mike Grace. Congratulations out to Cody Decker, the Pacific Coast League Player of the Week. Cody had 4 home runs and 15 RBI in 6 games for the El Paso
Chihuahuas. Cody's a good player. I can't believe we haven't seen him in San Diego in the last 2 years.
It's pretty amazing.
It really is.
It's there's a clamoring for him. The people want to see what he can do just because he's such a fun guy, and it would be interesting to see him here. Who knows? The opportunity will arise at some point, I think,
sure
for him
will
to be in the big leagues, whether it's with the Padres or another organization. But a guy that continues to hit like that in the minors, he'll get a shot at some point.
So let me ask you something.
Okay.
If you take the mound for the Padres tomorrow night,
oh my God,
what do you
trouble.
Do?
Coward.
What's your number one priority?
If I take the mound against the Padres?
No. For the Padres.
Oh, strike one.
You're the first ball you want to strike.
That's all I'm going to do.
That's awful.
Yeah. Enjoy your off day tonight, everybody. go out, have dinner, go sit in front of the TV. We'll be back here tomorrow. Annie and Bill at 5:30. Thanks, everybody.